All right, we are talking the cancer industry with John Rappaport, and in this next hour, we will open up the lines and take your calls. Interesting study that came out about 10 years ago. It was published, I believe the lead researcher on that study was a Dr. Peter Glidden. And according to the study, in cases of adult cancer in the U.S. and Australia, the use of chemotherapy when looking at adjuvant and curative use provided a cure only 2.1% of the time in the U.S. and 2.3% of the time in Australia. In other words, according to this study, chemotherapy is ineffective 97% of the time. When we come back, I'll ask John Rappaport from No More Fake News about chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery, the main weapons in the war on cancer. How effective are they? Back with more on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back here on Coast to Coast AM. My name is Richard Serrett. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, the website richardserrett.com. John Rappaport is with us from nomorefakenews.com, and we're talking about the cancer industry, granted a very cynical term. We are talking about, though, a $125 billion with a B industry, for better or worse. John Rappaport, my question to you would be is, when we're talking about sort of the three-pronged attack on cancer, which doesn't seem to have changed much in the last 50, 60 years, and that's chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery, let's talk about the efficacy of those three treatments. Let's start with surgery.
Well, I would say surgery all depends on, you know, how much, and I think doctors will tell you this, how localized we're talking about. Is it a single tumor somewhere that everybody can see, yeah, that's a serious cancer tumor. We can take that out and with minimal damage to the person and no surrounding problems, and it's easy to do. We can do this, absolutely. Or are we talking about just, you know, massive intervention here that's going to spread metastasized cancer cells around like some breast cancer surgery? But that's a whole other subject here, because when you're dealing with breast cancer, you're dealing with such a sea of information. You've got, for example, the fact that mammography itself, which is the screening, damages tissue and can cause mutational damage in women. Breasts by the very act of the screening. And the low energy x-rays are more mutational and damaging than the high energy. That's from the British Journal of Radiobiology, 2006. So, you know, you've got the test that's even toxic there. When you talk about chemo, I'm looking at a study here, 2012, Peter Nelson from Nature Medicine. Damage to healthy cells' DNA. Chemo causes healthy cells to secrete a protein that sustains tumor growth and also sustains resistance to further treatment. Whoa, this is not only just toxic, which everybody knows chemo is, but this is, you know, turning healthy cells into cancerous cells, making people more resistant to treatment, sustaining tumor growth. I mean, we're now talking about exceeding amounts of danger. And as I just referred to much earlier, the whole focus of the research arm of the cancer industry has been towards smaller and smaller increments of, quote, results. Smaller and smaller little studies on the mice, and we can do this with the thing. And what about saving lives? It's metastasis, the spreading of whatever cancer is that is causing people to die. What about putting that at the front of the agenda? We're trying to save lives here. We're not trying to study mice and get grant money. You know, you look at a few of these chemo drugs like Avastin. Years and years and years of study on this one drug. And what was the result? 400 patients with terminal colorectal cancer lived 4.7 months longer.
What about radiation?
Radiation, well, there's a good way of, you know, poisoning people. Radiation is poisonous. Again, I'm not ready to make an absolute blanket statement, because I know people who, when it was applied correctly in a very specific case, you know, where we weren't dealing, the doctors were not dealing, nobody was dealing with the spread all over, that it was successful in eliminating one tumor. Okay. But in general, the whole practice of radiation in cancer is just spreading mutation, burning tissue, causing cancer, as radiation does cause cancer, because it's being done with such, you know, abandon. Oh, yeah, radiation, sure, let's apply some radiation here. You need some radiation after you have the surgery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A very cavalier attitude, I would say, on the whole. But that's because these people are, you know, not focused. They're not focused on the right thing. They haven't been focused on the right thing forever. You know, there are 150,000 published mice studies using cancer drugs. 150,000 published studies on mice, which everybody knows are so different from humans, as I mentioned earlier. Why is that? Why are they all focusing on this insanity?
What did Einstein define insanity as?
Yeah, or Santayana, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. But here, the result is that they get grant money, you know, so they know, okay, if I do another mouse study, I get, you know, 75,000 more to do another study. Okay, well, I'll do another mouse study. This is aside from the evil that I mentioned earlier, this is the mindlessness of the machine turning out study after study after study.
All right. Are you going to take some calls, John?
Absolutely.
All right, let's start with the wild card line. Debbie is in Jackson, Tennessee. Good morning, Debbie.
Hi, I was wondering if you've heard of the doctor that invented the IVP to view the kidneys. I heard a report on him in about 1987 that he had come up with a new procedure to treat cancer that actually involved no drugs. And the criteria for the program was you had to have terminated all standard treatment. And he did a small group initially, only 9 patients. And what he did was is he put an electrical probe, the ground probe went into the tumor, and the charge probe went into the cells surrounding the tumor. And what he found was that tumors, and it was all multiple different types of tumors. 2 of the people had lung cancer. 2, I remember, had were young women with ovarian cancer. And it didn't matter what type of tumor it was. The cell, it emitted a chemical that neutralized the normal cells in our body that would eat a cancer cell. So it basically put them to sleep. And when you put the probe in and then charged it, they like woke up and did their job and ate the tumor. Well, he had 100% 5-year survival rate on saving patients. He wrote a book, he did further studies, and the way I remember it, because it was, like I said, 1987, was that he was in basically a secret location doing research. Patients came from all over the world for the study, and he wrote a book. Well, the American Medical Association summarily dismissed it because the book was so large and you had to completely rethink how the human body worked. And it was, again, by the pharmaceuticals, it wasn't going to require any. So you had a cure that was giving a 5-year, 100% survival rate. None of the patients in the study had the cancer returned, but they had died from different things, such as the 2 older gentlemen died from heart attacks, that type of thing.
I don't know the name of the researcher that you're talking about, so I couldn't. The only thing I could comment on this, I'm sure other people have heard of him, I haven't heard of these experiments, is You know, part of this has to do with openness on all sides. Unfortunately, you know, when you're facing legal problems like law enforcement is knocking on your door and they want to arrest you because you're not doing an approved treatment, it becomes very difficult to be open. But you have to somehow put the results that you've attained out there in a way that people can understand it. And if this guy has done that and he's been honest about it, great, tremendous. I hesitate to believe offhandedly in 100% of anything when it comes to, you know, cure rates and so forth. But more openness, even if, you know, the person doing it has to hide after writing his book, to put the method out there, to expose it, to show people what was done exactly on these patients with no omissions, that's important to be able to do that, no matter what the treatment is.
Debbie, thanks for the call. John, I think we need to, this is an important point. And that is, you know, there are a lot of hucksters out there that are selling snake oil and peddling false hope. So,
no question,
I mean,
how do we
protect people, victims, well, cancer victims, from those people at the same time, you know, yet say to them, listen, there are other people out here who might have beyond to something. How do we distinguish?
Well, first of all, usually by the time that a person who's been diagnosed with cancer comes to one of these people, you know, that we're talking about, things are in pretty bad shape. So it's usually the person, somebody close to the person who has cancer, who has to have his head on his shoulders here and to be able to assess, boy, this is not easy. I'm not saying this is easy, but to be able to assess what someone is promoting and saying, look, here's what I've got, this works, et cetera, et cetera. Show me the proof. Show me the evidence. Let's see the evidence. Do you have consecutive cases that you can expose to me? In other words, you know, a guy who says, so JZ from Minnesota says, I'm better now. I've lost my cancer. You know, this could be, I don't know, you know, it sounds like what? Let's have the whole story here. All the patients, without any left out. If someone is really trying to convince people of their honesty and forthrightness, they have to be forthright about what they're doing with all their patients, not just, you know, selling a little bit here and a little bit there. And you've got to be able to recognize people who are doing, you know, a hustle versus people that are willing to present you with everything they've got. That's a big difference. You can see the difference between the two. And that's, to me, the biggest protection you have. If somebody comes along and says, yeah, and so, and then this and that, no good. When I presented the names earlier in the show tonight, I welcome people to do research on these people. Now, the doctors that have done great work. Not saying perfect work all the time, everybody's cured, absolutely not. But more research on these people. So
absolutely, absolutely. Let's go to the wild card line again.
Yeah, go ahead.
Christian is in Los Angeles. So welcome to Coast, Christian. Is Christian there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on.
Yeah. Hi, I've been a Coast to Coast listener for quite a few years, about 6-7 years now. And I'm glad I'm actually was able to call in and get through to you guys because I wanted to share a story. I live with my uncle, and he is 94, and he's had prostate cancer for about 10 years now. But he became really sick, ill this past November, and he almost died. But we got him hospitalized, and we got him back, stable and at least healthy, and he's doing much better now. But he's had to take this whole regimentation every day, twice a day, of all of these hardcore medications such as prednisone, digoxin, a stool softener because he had constipation, Cinacate, Omeprazole, all of these medications. And the thing is that what I wanted to comment on is when I was visiting him when he was hospitalized at Kaiser for about 2 weeks, the thing that got me is that here we are, the war in Afghanistan is winding down. We're supposed to withdraw all of our combat troops by December, and that the trillions of dollars that we've spent on Iraq and Afghanistan, and it just really gets me that with all of this money spent on the defense industry, the war machine, that you can't siphon off, let's say, half of that, you know, let's say if like President Obama, and give a good hunk of that money to medical research and literally give them a standing order that I'm going to give you 10 years to find a cure for HIV/AIDS and to find a cure to eradicate cancer. And if that happened, that could be done. I mean, that is, I believe, a task that can be accomplished.
And, good call, Christian. Thank you. Yeah, let's have a real war on cancer. Let's bring out the real heavy artillery.
Yeah, right. It all depends on the ethical and honest nature of the people involved. That's all I can say. Yeah, a president can stand up and say, we're diverting this much money, but to whom are you diverting it? You know, is it the same people that brought you, a chemotherapy drug that shrank a few tumors in 10% of the patients, and that's all, shrank the tumor but didn't extend life? Is that where the money is going to continue to go? Because, you see, it's a gigantic machine. The National Institutes of Health, the National Cancer Institute, all of the journals that are associated with this. All, you know, if you keep putting the same amount of money or more into the same machine, what are you going to get? That's the problem. That is the problem.
We've just got a couple minutes here before we go into another break. John, in an earlier segment, you started to talk about Dr. Gonzalez, who I believe has developed some sort of an enzyme therapy, and we didn't get to that thought. So can we at least begin that discussion? Tell me about this Dr. Gonzalez.
Well, basically what I know about Nick Gonzalez is that he operates in New York and that this is basically a nutritional protocol for cancer patients. It's sophisticated. It's not like take one of these and two of these. Gonzalez says, you know, from everything that I understand, this is a major commitment on your part. I'm going to do everything I can to help you, but you've got to follow the protocol, and it's complicated. I mean, it's not like, you know, you can do it, but you've got to commit yourself. And that a study was done, an official study, not by Gonzalez, but other people who said, you know, he's been around for a long time, and all right, let's give it a try. And from a university standpoint, a study was done. And then it was, you know, didn't work, absolutely not, no good, forget it. And then it was pointed out to Gonzalez by somebody, and you can verify this with Nick, I believe. Hey, Nick, did you see the way they did your study? Did you really look at it? Is this really what you would have done with a patient? And Gonzalez was, of course, alarmed to discover, no, they didn't do it the right way. This has been done with Brzezinski. It was done with hydrogen sulfate. The National Cancer Institute, I mentioned this earlier in the show. It's the same playbook. It's take the promising alternative treatment, study it in such a way that is going to not work, do whatever it takes. You can call this a combination of, evil plus bungling incompetence, whatever you want to say about it. And then just say, we can dismiss this. Ridiculous. Let's go back to studying mice again. That's the problem. If you end up with the mice, and it's not going to help people with cancer.
When we come back, we're coming up on a break here. When we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the role of Big Pharma in medical schools and in the peer review process. I mean, you take a look at the New England Journal of Medicine or Lancet, and you flip through it, and what do you see? Ad after ad after ad from the pharmaceutical companies, and it seems to me that's the big elephant in the room. A bit of a conflict of interest there, I'd say. We'll do that with John Rappaport from NoMoreFakeNews.com and your calls as well. If you've got a line, hold on to it. More of Coast to Coast AM after this. My name is Richard Serrett. We're talking about the cancer industry here on Coast tonight with John Rappaport from NoMoreFakeNews.com, and we'll get back to that conversation momentarily. Just a heads up coming up at the top of the hour, new scientific evidence that the Shroud of Turin is not, in fact, a clever medieval forgery, but is what it is reported by millions of Christians to be, and that is the authentic burial shroud of Jesus of Nazareth. Back with more of Coast. My name is Richard Serrett. And welcome back to Coast AM. John Rappaport, my guest, talking about the cancer industry And John, I want to get to around to this discussion as to whether drug company money is tainting medical education. There was a story that ran in Time magazine back in 2009. Let me just crib from that article here. It's not often that a place like Harvard Medical School gets an F, particularly when rivals Stanford, Columbia, and the University of Pennsylvania are pulling A's and B's. But that's what happened recently when the members of the increasingly influential and increasingly noisy American Medical Student Association decided to grade 150 med schools on just how much money and gifts they're collecting from drug companies. The more goodies a school is vacuuming up from the industry, the worse its grade. So, again, the article goes on to rank these schools, and Harvard Medical School gets an F, talking about how the medical education there has been tainted by big pharma, essentially.
Yeah, no question about it. It's happened. It keeps happening. They did some protests, and they had some meetings and so on and so forth. But, I mean, you know, it's like you and I are sitting here talking about the cancer industry for 2 hours, and we're just beginning to scratch the surface. So I can assure you that when a few Harvard Medical School students get together and say, gee, influence of big pharma on medical schools, we have to stop that. Yeah, good luck. You've got to stop that with a massive revolution. That's what it would take. And now, as you said before the break, this is the elephant in the room. I mean, the medical system in the United States kills 106,000 people a year by the direct administration of FDA-approved pharmaceutical drugs approved by the FDA as safe and effective. That's a very conservative estimate, but it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association on July 26, 2000, by Dr. Barbara Starfield, who was a revered public health expert at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. That's over a million deaths per decade, a million caused by FDA-approved pharmaceuticals manufactured by drug companies, which have an unholy hold on medical schools, all forms of medical training, doctor's offices, et cetera, et cetera. They are there inside every aspect of the medical system that you can imagine and every aspect of the industry that you can imagine. They, more than anybody, run things. And at a very conservative estimate, they kill over a million people a year just in the United States with these drugs. So when we're talking about cancer industry and so forth, and these people who have come along as independents who say, I've got something to say about healing cancer, and here's my work. I wish somebody would look at this instead of putting me in front of a grand jury. This is the kind of contrast we're talking about here. This system is killing people at an alarming rate. Are they in medical schools? Absolutely, from stem to stern. They're everywhere. This is the elephant, the dinosaur, the stegosaurus. This is the mother spaceship in the middle of the living room, is the pharmaceutical industry. They are over and over again proving themselves to be a death machine, and nobody is stopping them.
Let's go east of the Rockies and say hi to Byron in Indiana. Byron, you're on Coast to Coast. Are you there, Byron?
Yes,
hi,
am.
Hi, welcome.
Yep. My wife and I love listening to your show. We got two quick questions for you tonight. Do you think that the doctors get, every time they write a prescription is like chemotherapy or something, that they're getting these huge kickbacks? And the other question,
do you think that the government won't really secure because cancer is a form of population control and it saves them money in the long run from having to pay people Social Security benefits?
All right,
okay,
Byron and my partner, thanks
there
for the call, I'll say.
two heavy questions. To my knowledge, doctors do not receive a direct payment for prescribing chemotherapy. It's not a direct kickback, but there are all kinds of perks that doctors can get from pharmaceutical companies like trips and, you know, junkets and conference speaking engagements, and then they can also be put on a drug company's payroll to be a representative, in a sense, or a spokesman for that company. So there are all kinds of payoffs to all sorts of doctors that are going on all the time. As far as whether cancer is a form of, you know, people dying from cancer, population control, My sense of this is yes, yes. But in about 3 minutes, I can't argue the case here. But what I can say is that the spread of toxic chemicals through the environment causing cancer is not being held in check. It's the corporation's advantages to keep that flow going because it's money in their pocket and they keep selling and selling and making money and money. And incidentally, more people die, to which these corporations are completely indifferent. And it is a form of population control, but I wouldn't call it, you know, the leading cutting edge of that program. I would just simply say that it's looked upon as, sure, get rid of people that the elites don't want to have around. No question in my mind about it, but we could talk about that another time.
Yeah, that might just be one of the most cynical and depressing things I've heard in a long time. And you and I have had some pretty, you know, depressing conversations, I suppose, John, but...
But there's an upside to this, Richard, I really believe. You see, it's like, to me, seeing all of this, you then say, okay, that's what's going on now. Okay, let's talk about, you know, the way out of this. Where? How do we get here? Why did this happen? Understanding that really can lead to understanding what, you know, what freedom is all about, what we're supposed to be doing while we're alive, you know, and that to me is a very joyous, adventurous kind of thing. It's not like, oh my God, you know, there's no hope. There's always hope. There's always a chance. And I'm not talking about political hope from, you know, slogans. I'm talking about the real thing when people say, well, you know, they've gotten to this point because they've turned into machines. They don't know what being alive is. The people that really run things. What does that mean about human consciousness? I mean, you begin to get into this, into the heads of people who would be willing to dispense with large numbers of people for corporate profit. And you begin to understand the difference between them and you. It's a way of understanding who you are and therefore what your potential is and what you can do when all the whining and complaining stops and you really say, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing here. Okay. Let's get to work. that's when the good stuff happens.
and I know that's sort of the subject of one of your CD-ROM series entitled Escaping the Matrix, is it not?
Yes, it is, exactly. Because this whole medical aspect is one part of that bigger matrix that I talk about. And, you know, people can learn about that at No More Fake News or what that collection is all about. But yeah, it's the idea of your power is greater than you could possibly realize, you know, or my mind is greater than I could possibly, and everybody's. That's the same way. It's not just a few people. We're talking about everybody. So let's find out more about what that is. Power to make change, power to create new realities. Imagination is power, as opposed to accepting the status quo that's put in front of your face every day, the mural that's called reality that is painted for you and me and everybody else by these giant elites and corporations and so forth. It goes a lot deeper than just selling product. It goes a lot deeper than, you know, what we consider to be everyday life. This is reality constructed for us, so that we become the passive spectators instead of the artists who actually imagine and create reality for real.
But west of the Rockies, and Mike is in Auburn, Washington. Mike, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Oh, good morning, Richard. How you doing?
Wonderful, thanks. Good to have you aboard.
Yeah, I'd like to ask John a question as to if he has any information or speculation about what these head of big pharma and corporations and the people that cause these problems as far as the cancer and the suppression of cancer treatments that are really effective, what do they really, what do you think that they use in their personal lives for their own medical care? What kind of, where do they get clean water? Where do they get foods that aren't going to cause cancer? Because surely they must know that these things cause cancer or suppress cancer. So what do you think they do for themselves? Because you don't hear about the global elite or heads of corporation or heads of government getting cancer that much or being dying from cancer like the general population does. And I was just curious if he's done any research as to what kind of treatments they get that could be different than the general public's.
Good question,
Not
Mike.
Not specific research on it, but all I can tell you is I've heard stories. I mean, you probably have too. You know, a politician who goes to Europe and is given some kind of a treatment that is natural treatment, but is very powerful, et cetera, and the symptoms go away. Whether this is true or not, I don't know. But I agree with your implication, let's put it that way, which is that there are certain people in this world who have access to treatments that your average person does not have access to. They don't care about all the rules and regulations for themselves. They just wanted to enforce them on everybody else. And that some of these treatments that they are accessing and are receiving are effective. And they should be released for public use. Absolutely. I think you've hit a very important nail on the head here, which is elites do, in fact, take advantage of alternative treatments that are there for them. They just want to deny it to everybody else.
All right. First-time caller Stevie is in San Pedro, California. Stevie, welcome.
Yes, thank you for this forum. Look, we have the power to say no. That's what I'm talking about here. Hey, look, I've been in emergency rooms where I've had conditions, and I have walked out. I've actually pulled the intravenous plugs out of my arms, okay? Because I know that sometimes you're being played. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do understand what you're saying, and I agree with you. The only thing, and I'm glad that you got in here under the wire, so to speak, because the bottom line here is the power to say no, which means freedom. In other words, this above all we have to maintain, no matter how we do it, is that every person, every citizen has the right to say no to treatment and medication. They can say yes if they want to, okay, but they can say no too. Once you cross that line where it becomes impossible to say no, then, I mean, wow, now you're really into it up to your eyeballs. That ability and power that you're talking about to say no, you know, a real no, where you really have looked at the situation, you say, no, I don't want that. I don't want that treatment. I don't want that medicine. No. And you make up your mind and that's it. We've got to preserve that freedom because that allows us to get enough information to survive and to get out of where we are. If it becomes a total Gestapo state where people are marching into your house and saying, you know, you didn't take this medicine this morning, and this is the state saying you've got to take this or else you're going to jail. That's a whole different world.
Informed consent. Informed consent. And it's getting harder to say no. We're not talking about fluoride here tonight, but look at fluoride as an example. If fluoride is in your drinking water in your community, you don't have a right to say no. You can't avoid it. You could say, well, you'll get bottled water. You take a shower. You absorb that fluoride through your skin. That's a drug. Yet we don't have the right to say no. There's no informed consent on that drug.
Absolutely. That's one of those examples where you can see what happens when the line is crossed. Now you have to get the whole community or, you know, petitions, and now you have to have a vote in the town council or the city council to take the fluoride out of the water, and you've got people that are being influenced by industry on that council. That's a heck of a lot harder, way much harder than it is to say, you know, this chemo drug that you're talking, no thanks, I think I'm not going to do that. That's a whole different level, and you're right. The fluoride is the illustration of where things are going that we don't want to go.
Wildcard line, Mary is in Wisconsin. Mary, welcome to the welcome to Coast to Coast. Good to have you with us.
Hello. I'm so glad I got in time. I have had a theory for years over a cancer, and a very simple one, and that is this. We all have learned from a very young age that cancer is when a cell gets out of control and has a mind of its own, and it grows and grows and grows. Anyway, over the years, I've been into natural medicine. I came to the conclusion that years ago, that one particular a thing could kill cancer, a cancer cell. Very recently, I was put in the rather unfortunate, or fortunate, depending on how you want to look at it, situation to test my theory. I ended up thinking I had a stomach problem. It ended up being a tumor. And they had to get this, told me they had to get it out right away. It was very, very dangerous. And I said, give me a little time. They looked at me like I was crazy. I said, I just need some days. Days to do what I want to do. Well, I had 8 days to do it. And I did it in 8 days. And I believe I killed this huge cancerous tumor. I won't even tell you how big it was. It's so embarrassing. With magnesium chloride, which is a spray. And the reason I chose magnesium chloride is magnesium itself is the nucleus of every living cell, plant or animal. And if you go at a tumor with magnesium, it'll go right at the cell and kill it right at the nucleus. And this thing, like I said, I don't want to tell you how huge it was. It's embarrassing. Not even 2 weeks ago, this Saturday night, I felt that thing deflate, and it sounded like a little animal dying inside of me. They then, the following Monday, put me into the hospital, took the tumor out because it was big, and they've been looking for 8 days for that cancer that was connected to an ovary, and they can't find it.
And how do you take that? Is that as a spray or as a liquid?
Magnesium chloride is a spray. It's a spray. You put it on topically, and I the minute I put this thing on, it was on the 21st of March, not even, 4 weeks ago, I found out it just was a tumor. They let me out of the hospital, thank God, because they were ready to do emergency surgery on me the following Sunday night, the 23rd. And I said, wait a minute, you just told me some outrageous news. Give me a chance to absorb this psychologically, emotionally, as a child. And they let me out, and they said, okay, get back here on Monday, go to the doctor, get this appointment set up with this doctor. This is dangerous. And then I went to the doctor on Tuesday, and I said, I want a little more time. The doctor said, you're crazy. I said, just a little time.
And you, Mary, you went an entirely different route, and a remarkable story. John, let me get John in here. John, have you heard of using magnesium to treat cancer?
Yes, I have, but I don't know what to say about this story except, okay, you know, this is a person saying what they did, fine. I don't have a kind of overview of everything that's happened with magnesium and magnesium chloride in different forms. Couldn't say. But, you know, once you open this door, as you well know, Richard, we could sit here for the next 6 months. And you would have story after story after story. And a certain number of these stories would be so. They would be accurate. They would be true. They would be people who have gone off the beaten track. Some of the stories would be hype and promotion, et cetera, et cetera. But it just shows you the degree to which people are trying to break out of what has been the stranglehold of a system that is grinding down their health, grinding down their ability to live joyously.
Yeah. Well, John, great discussion, and I appreciate the 2 hours you spent with us. There are a lot of quacks out there. We need to be on guard, but we also need to open up the system and start paying attention to some of these other alternative remedies, therapies, claims of cancer cures. And we need to put the cancer industry on notice. We're watching you.